on 1116 SEN. We're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and he had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic, but at some time during a game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555.
Welcome and good morning on a cloudy but still, and hopefully, I think it will be, rain-free day here in Melbourne. Not that it will affect the game at Etihad, but it will maybe affect your long weekend. And hopefully we affect it as well, because we, that is Robert Shaw and myself, are back for another year of Inside Football, the full-on look at footy for the weekend. Everything that happens inside the chalk. We're not concerning ourselves with any matters, courts, testing, controversies, forget it. Robert Shaw, my co-host, we lend on his wonderful authority as a top level player, coach, assistant coach, manager, and of course, talent scout. Good morning to you, Robert. They've given us another year, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, they've given us another year, 27 weeks to go, Mark. So happy Easter to everybody, and we had a great weekend. We had a sit back and watch these games. Unfortunately, I didn't get to the games live, but there was a very good reason, because that was the only way we could cover every game. So saw every game. The only difficulty, a couple of back-to-back, not back-to-back, but running at the same time. So, but we got through, and they were fantastic games. They were terrific games. big tick to the Pies. We'll cover them later. Obviously, we're going to dissect the Essendon-Sydney game and have a look at issues other than preparation that affected the result of that game. And I will say that there were three games on the weekend, Mark, where a team kicked seven unanswered goals. Sydney's is well documented, and the reasons for it, well documented, or were they? Brisbane kicked seven on the end of Collingwood, and also Richmond, after Carlton got away to a great start, kicked seven on end. So it's not a one-off thing that Sydney did. There's reasons why these things happen, and hopefully we can go through it. Melbourne is a great story because that is a developing football team, and it's taken a while. And who would have thought, Mark, we would be saying, and this is no disrespect, Melbourne too tough. Melbourne too tough. And it's on the back of some good selective recruiting from the ageing yet ageless Daniel Cross to this new young number 10, Angus Brayshaw, who put their head over the ball and really did take it up to the front-running Gold Coast.
So much to talk about in this round. There's a little Aussie expression. If you don't have a lot of guts, you call it an Easter egg. As much guts as an Easter egg, because they tend to be hollow. Well, Australian rules football is a sport for the courageous, and we got a reminder 1 minute into the season, and then 1 minute into the Essendon versus Sydney game, and right throughout the weekend, how tough a sport it is and how the human body can withstand so much. But unfortunately, in the case of some players, it goes to breaking point. Every Sunday morning, we'll be joined by John Ralph from the Herald Sun out of 11 o'clock for the latest injury news. And those injury updates cover not only what happened in the AFL on the weekend, but some long-term injuries to key footballers in secondary football competitions and in practice matches around the country. So there was, I don't know if you've caught up with the news, but terrible news for Jager O'Meara, who could face the entire season on the sidelines after dislocating his knee in the kneeful. We'll be covering off on that, find out the latest. Hopefully some good news for Carlton fans, re-Daisy Thomas, we believe so, and a variety of other injuries incurred throughout the weekend. And when you ask about guts, you only need to look at Luke Parker. Close to best on ground when he gets cannoned into by that human locomotive by the name of Buddy Franklin. So we'll find out the latest on all of those injuries and more from John Ralph. But let's start off, and there were so many choices here for the first game to look at on Full On Footy Inside Football for the year. Let's start with the one that had a huge comeback, a big backstory, and some amazing football. It was at ANZ Stadium. It was the Swans. The big comeback against the Bombers.
Inside Football, the Sydney Swans. Essendon.
Buddy goes back through with a kick. Couldn't get it out. Here's a chance to ice it. Isaac Heaney! Yes, sir! How impressive has this last quarter been from the Swannies?
Started to change the momentum a bit in the second quarter. I think it was 20-odd inside 50s to 6 or 7, 6-odd in the second quarter, and we started to get the change back. We didn't get reward for our effort going forward, and we're slipping further away from us. But we thought the change had happened by a quarter time, and even though the scoreboard didn't probably correlate the same way, we thought that the effort and the intensity had changed a little bit, but we hadn't had the reward of effort. And then there's no doubt that last quarter was, we needed to keep running and running, and we did.
Last night, or close to last night, it ended up in darkness. Sydney, 10-12-72, turned around a 41-point deficit to defeat the Bombers, 9-6-60, in front of a very disappointing crowd of 23,274 at ANZ Stadium. The leading goal kickers for Sydney, Lance Franklin, 3, and for Essendon, debutante in the red and black, Cooney, with 3. This was a game, Robert, obviously, that in obvious terms, the simple explanation is when at least half the side doesn't have a requisite pre-season and play the practice matches that harden footballers for the real thing, there was always going to be a question on legs and whether or not Essendon could run out the game. And the obvious way of looking at it is that they led, of course, by 40 points. They failed to score in the last quarter. They got overrun by Sydney, 10-12-72 to 9-6-60. There's more to it than that. Emotions were high for the Bombers. It was an amazing game of football. Brave Essendon, who virtually had no substitute option for the entire game, with Myers getting injured early. Then Luke Parker, possibly the best player on the ground at the time, not far off for Sydney, gets collided into by Buddy Franklin. So they lose a key player in the last quarter. Lance Franklin comes to the fore. There are heroic acts. There is some brilliant football and brilliant footballers on both sides who perform. And whilst Essendon lose the game, if Sydney are a measuring stick, and they will be, one imagines, then that performance by the Bombers surely gives their fans cause for optimism as the season progresses. Because when you have a look at that team, when you have a look at the Essendon side, you can put a... we have the terms A-graders, B-graders. That is subjective. All of our assertions on footballers are subjective. But when you throw around the tag star or champion, you want to do so carefully, because if you do it too often, you dilute it to the point of irrelevance. And I honestly believe that in the game of football, we should only ever have, say, 15 champions at any one time as a nominal figure. Maybe 18, one per side. But some sides don't have them, and Essendon has a couple of them. Dyson Heppel now, I think, can genuinely be considered a star of AFL football every time he steps on the field. And I think very similarly of Joe Watson. His ability inside, his strength, his resolve, his never-say-die attitude. He's not a Brownlow medalist for no reason. So Essendon supporters have, of course, the disappointment of coughing up a 40-point lead, but I think they rested their heads on their pillows pretty comfortably last night, Robert, with a team that will be mighty competitive.
Well, they're going to be more than competitive. They're going to be a good side. And let's document it very, very clearly. There is an effect of lack of practice games. What percentage? I don't know. Is it 70, 80? Who would know? As I alluded to before, there were three other games where opposition teams kicked 7 to 8 unanswered goals. And this is exactly what happened in the Sydney game. The Meyer effect was a contributing factor because he's highly valued in and around the midfield and left them without that sub, of course. But on the other hand, there was also some very good coaching and a little bit of bravery from John Lawmore. Mark, at the third quarter, when they were 41 points down, Sydney had had 117 kicks to 121 handballs. Most of those handballs, as you saw, were in close, in wet conditions, ineffective, and meant that the player receiving the ball was standing still and hacking it forward. Now, Hurley did a magnificent job and took the points off Franklin, obviously early. But what about the service to Franklin was deplorable. And this came because of lack of pace, lack of run, and gee, it was a carbon copy of the grand final at one stage. I must say, around the stoppages, Essendon outsmarted them. They obviously had Watson and Heppel winning inside ball, but their positioning of Goddard and Collier was outstanding. And you've seen Goddard play all his career. The feedback to Goddard, the smart kick or the smart handball, particularly to Collier, who's only had 16 or 17 possessions and did die in his run home. There's no doubt about that. But his run and carry meant that Essendon's forwards had a better shot at it than Lance Franklin, the disappointing Reed, and the sometimes okay Tippett. So it was Essendon's run and smarts around the stoppages. Now, what John Lamar did then, he obviously got them to change. They are an experienced side, and he got them to change. They finished with 204 kicks and 170 handballs. So they became a kicking team. And this is the effect of Essendon dropping off. It allowed Sydney space to run. When did you see Jeddah? Influential in the last... Never saw him all day on that outer wing. Influential with his pace and his run and his carry towards the end. If I had said to you, Mark, that he will sub Goods and lose Parker and improve... You would have had me institutionalised, correct?
Possibly.
Parker, yeah. So, Parker out, good subbed. Young Lloyd's come on and had 13. And he gave him a little bit of run.
Yes, he did.
I would have thought, watching that game, with two possessions, that Mike Pike would have been systematically hauled off the ground. But he continued to go with the big blokes, which gave them...
Just on Lloyd.
It just gave them tip it up forward. You know, to take a little bit of pressure off Franklin.
And Tippett was good in that last quarter.
And then when Franklin got service, he got on top of a very, very brave and a very good Michael Hurley.
Just on Lloyd, that really brings out, it sort of magnifies the loss of Myers because Essendon were unable, therefore, to bring on fresh legs in that last quarter. Had they... had that lead at three-quarter time and were able to activate their...
A very good sub in Howlett, you're right.
Their sub then they would have had...
Oh, there's no doubt there's issues.
Lloyd-like fresh legs that would have certainly got the ball inside 50 more often than it did in that last quarter because it barely ever got there. Cooney needed to take that mark. He had an opportunity in the last quarter to swing the pendulum back, but we can't be critical of a guy who's going to... not be the possession winner that he was when he was a Brownlow medalist, but if he can return key goals, he kicked the most amazing torpedo goal I've ever seen.
It was fantastic,
wasn't it? The one at quarter time, the mid-air torpedo.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've seen people kick the ball in mid-air, but I've never seen them quite kick it torpedo style. That was very nice. He was, you know, he kicked three special goals, and that's what you're going to get from Cooney. You won't get much more physically from him. And Essendon do have to carefully balance having the experience of Fletcher, Chapman and Cooney on the field with the fact that they are older footballers with bodies that need to be monitored not only week to week, but also during the game. So that's something that Essendon will have to
fine-tune.
Did you
find it surprising, given the fact that he has played games? They are managing him, there's no doubt, but he has played games that he basically played... I don't know, 80% of the game as a forward, Mark, as an opportunist forward. And when they really needed the old Cooney up on a wing, they weren't able to put him there, and that sort of surprised me.
But it makes sense because his degenerative knee condition, at the Bulldogs, he would have many good first quarters and first halves and literally not be able to run the game out. So to have him... be responsible for a man. If he was further up the ground, he would have had to be travelling that length and breadth of that ground with an opponent who would have been a running type opponent, and I think he would have been dulled to the point of gone. So at least that's why he needed to take that mark in the last quarter, because he was being used as a forward and spared the travails of putting his knee, especially in those tough conditions, through 100 minutes of running up and down the ground and being accountable as well as being creative.
The other thing I want to talk about, going back to stoppages, there's no doubt, and I don't know why, because once they were gone, John Longmire became dangerous. He took less players to a stoppage. Like, it was a terrible game early to watch. You know, 25 people round the stoppages, handball, scrub a kick. And that's why Essendon was so more effective with their inside 50s, because they were able to set up the exit through Goddard and Collier and these sort of blokes to go in. But then he had to make the decision. He had to say, right, I need space. If they're going to tire, one thing we need when teams tire, we need space. We need Jetta to get into the game. We need Jack to keep running and to start running, because he started on Goddard on a wing very, very early. Hurd, this also created through Myers, Hurd had to make a decision when Sydney were coming. And you've seen this done time and time again with St Kilda and now Essendon. Goddard behind the ball. Goddard behind the ball, back into defence. That took away the key, you know, it's Watson to Goddard set up, isn't it?
Yeah, and unfortunately, when Goddard was back, pressed into action, he made the worst mistake of the game. Yeah. He handballed Sydney into a goal, which, you know, that just happened. It slipped out of his hand. It's got nothing to do with Goddard or his abilities. But
it was a tough decision to make, because he had to try and hold the fort. They actually had 9 backs there at one stage just trying to hold on. But what that did was create space for the Sydney people that stayed back across the middle to actually have space to run. So it was a really hard decision that Hurd had to make as to how to put the brakes on. But in doing so, he actually created space for Sydney to run. And then we saw them come into their own.
Essendon were let down by 2 or 3 players in that last quarter. They were let badly down by a couple of players. And one of them is an experienced footballer who's had his critics. And his critics mainly don't like him because of how he uses the ball. But he didn't get the ball in the last quarter. And unless you find out that Brent Stanton was injured, then his performance in the last quarter needs to be questioned. He hadn't thrown himself, he hadn't physically exerted himself on the game like any of his teammates.
Well, that's a very good point.
So he's the one player I thought could have really let
loose. He's the fittest bloke in the club.
Correct.
Has been the fittest bloke in the club. He was the bloke that could stand up and take over from, if Goddard had to go back,
correct,
they had to have a
and in
player.
And in the absence of a sub, in the absence of Goddard, in the absence of Collier, who'd run himself into the ground.
He did. He did.
Then
the
stand up Brent Stanton. Now, I don't know where he was in that last quarter. My TV screen isn't wide enough. So it was a disappointing effort by somebody who we may find out was carrying an injury in the last quarter. Essendon did not have the flexibility to necessarily bring him off.
I think you raise a very good point, and we're trying to be fair here but honest. If Essendon people or football people say lack of match practice and leave it at that, it's not the case. It is a significant part of the case. But knowing the young fella as I do, or the experienced fella as I do now, I would have thought that 3 possessions in a half of football for the fittest player on the Essendon list, regardless of match practice, as a senior player, a member of the leadership group, Brett Stanton would be disappointed in that output today. There's no question about that. So, folks,
we may hear more. It's so uncharacteristic. Brent Stanton does have critics when it comes to his usage of the ball, but the way that game was played and the fact that he hadn't been physically exploited in the first half, wasn't him throwing himself about to get Essendon 40 points up. I would have thought, and at that point, stand up Brent Stanton. Likewise, I was very interested in how Nick Malcevski's departure from the Sydney Football Club would impact. Dane Rampey has been charged with some of the responsibility. He didn't handle it very well last night.
No, he didn't.
Made some bad one-on-one decisions, conceding free kicks and almost conceding before the ball hit the ground that his mobility, his lightness of foot was going to be taken advantage of. So he got very close physically, and he pushed his opponent, and gave away a couple of free kicks that might have been a bit of a tell on his own concerns about the speed of a couple of the Essendon half-forward flankers and their mobility as compared to his.
Well, having said that, you cast your mind back to the grand final and you say, as a result of that performance where we were outrun, Hawthorn obviously a better side, more mobility, more pace, what have we added to our side? They've lost Malcheski through no fault of their own because he's allowed to leave, right?
And remember, Malcheski was sort of upgraded when Ty Kennelly left the club. So that team has, under Ruse and Longmire, relied on the galloper out of the back line.
And that's why it puts extra pressure on Shaw to do that, right? And he's a very...
He does it on one side.
He had three touches in the second half. But it's the same side that's run out there. We were enthused about the performance of young Heaney at 18 years of age. So they've added some youth and some life. Jetta was, to me, exactly the same as he was in the grand final until the game opened up and it got on Sydney's terms. The conditions didn't suit the big fella, so we'll give Franklin Tippett Reed.
Yeah, and Franklin did something fantastic in that last quarter. His rundown tackle of Danaher.
Yeah, I know.
For him, it was like not dissimilar. If you watch those National Geographic programs and you see how the kings of the jungle, how a lion or a cheetah sees prey, sees within the herd, pardon the pun, Essendon supporters, possibly the slower or the weaker man. Now, Danaher, because of his size and because of the lateness of the game, Franklin knew he could run him down, and he came from a long way off left to storm in for one of the most important tackles, maybe the match-winning tackle of the game. It was brilliant by Buddy.
There's no doubt about that. I've got a question for you about a champion player, and I know it's only round one, and you always make mistakes when you write these people off, and I'm not, but I'm raising the question that at 34... where is Adam Goodes' position in that side? They started him on the ball. Talk about preparation. They reckon he's had his best preparation for a long time. He's played all the practice games, and yet he hit a serious, serious wall when the old Adam Goodes, with his pace and his run, should have been available to break that game up.
Yeah, he's...
And the result was they took him off and improved.
He's the cherry on top of an operational Sydney. Now, that doesn't mean they have to be... Look, he was admirable in last year's grand final. That doesn't mean they have to be necessarily winning the game. I'm not saying he's a front runner, but because he plays a very undefined position, he's not a key forward, he's not really part of their on-ball division and couldn't be trusted to be part of either. He complements the forward line if the structures are working really nicely. Remember, they've barely got room for Sam Reed in that team. So how you incorporate Goods into that needs to be fortuitous. And the midfield can always, any midfield can add another player to it. Depth in the midfield is a big cornerstone of successful football teams. But again, that midfield needs to be operating pretty well. I don't think he can step into a midfield like the one last night that was getting beaten with Heppel on top and Watson on top and a number of Essendon players playing well through the midfield. He doesn't go there as a stopper. He goes there as a shock trooper to add to the situation. So he's not the ice cream sundae. He's not the cream. He's not the cherry. I don't know what goes on top of a cherry cream and ice cream sundae, but he's the bit that goes on top of that. So it is, I think, and I'm not saying there won't be weeks where he bedazzles, but everything else the jigsaw really needs to be in place for him to be a worthwhile member of that team. I don't think he can help arrest a situation, and we saw that yesterday.
Just a quick point, Mark, on finishing out games. You've mentioned him already. So with no preparation, Heppel 10. Last quarter.
I liked Heppel.
Watson 6.
Liked him. Loved him.
Now, one player who was very influential, Melkstrom. Quarter, 2 touches.
Yeah.
Right? Collier, extremely influential, 3. Gleeson, I thought, showed something for them. Some good run and carry. He had 8 in the first quarter. He didn't touch the ball in the last quarter.
Well, just tell me how
Hanbury only had 2.
Tell me how Hanbury, Jack, and Josh Kennedy went in that last quarter.
Well, Kennedy had 8, Hanbury 9, Jack 9.
There are extenuating circumstances.
Is it a fact?
Yeah.
You cannot replace match practice with simulated practice.
Look, sometimes...
To what degree is the degree we're debating? And we're also saying there are other issues that came into that game.
Sorry, sometimes when you arrive at school and you tell the teacher the dog ate my homework, there are rare occasions the dog actually ate your homework. I think on this occasion, the dog might have eaten Essendon's homework. Both teams should be well pleased. We're going to come back. Feel free to call in at any time. 9429 1116.
I'd be more concerned if I was Sydney. I'd be more concerned. I think there is a greater vision and a greater optimism.
Interesting.
Because the reason they were bad is the reason they were bad in the grand final.
And there's the concern. When we come back, woof woof. Spider Lee sits here this morning, like all Bulldog supporters, upbeat. A very brave West Coast goes down to the Doggies at Etihad, and we'll tell you what went down when we return.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. Inside Football. The Western Bulldogs. The West Coast Eagles.
We're the Eagles. West Coast Eagles. And we're here.
To Dalhouse, who kicks towards half forward. No mark, but Bonampelli cruises onto it. And then the left footer, oh, that wasn't his best hand pass. He goes again, gets it to Wallace, who hand passed to Stringer. 45 out, round the corner. Brilliant goal.
And in the end, yeah, it's a great effort by our players to hold on and get over the top of them in the last quarter. So I'm really proud of them, and they really deserve it. They've obviously had a tough summer. Our boys, you know, they've had to deal with a lot of ridicule and innuendo, and they're terrific young men, and they really deserve the win tonight.
Last night at Etihad Stadium, the Western Bulldogs, 14-13-97, defeated West Coast 14-3-87 in front of 22,366, a very similar crowd to Sydney versus Essendon, but for West Coast and the Bulldogs, not a bad turnout. Leading goal kickers, 3 for Stringer, who was fantastic for the Doggies, and for West Coast, Cripps was deadly and played an excellent game of football with 5 goals. Before we get into the nitty-gritty, watching this game on television, and something was, because I was trying to catch as much of this game and then important parts of the Collingwood-Brisbane comeback. Now, there are, in a season where obviously Gillon McLachlan is working with the clubs and the stadium to make the football experience better, there is something that is part of our game, unique to our game, special in our game, I believe, and that's our scoring system. Now, there's many sports out there which give you the final points. You can get any game of basketball anywhere in the world, 102 to 98, 114 to 110, and that's what it is. Last night, I realised that when you watch football now on television, you only get the points. And because I'd been trading stations for consistency, I didn't realise that at the very end of the game, West Coast kicked their 3rd point for the game. I think we need to know the scores. And the scores in the, for example, Sydney game, where they were 1-7-13, is very different to 2-1-13. But unless you hear the commentator say, and they don't say it like they do on radio, until quarter time, and you only get it for a moment, do you actually get goals and behinds? Our game is goals and behinds. It's not total points. It's not 97 to 87. Last night's game was 14-13 to 14-3, and that tells a tale in itself.
It does, Mark. 27 shots to 17.
But we don't get that now in our football coverage. And if there's not enough real estate to do it, then bring it up on a regular basis after goals. Show 14-13 to 14-3 or whatever it is at the time. They used to do that on the coverage. Well, I can tell you, they don't anymore. And I've got to say, it's another example of the defootification of footy. Come on, Gil, you've been great on everything. Get onto this one as well. It's goals, behinds and a total, not total points. That's basketball, mate.
All right. There you go.
Now the game.
Now the game. The two games that interest me the most over the weekend were the games involving Melbourne and the Western Bulldogs.
And by the way, for Melbourne supporters, I know some are SMSing through. After 11, your first game off the rank, and there'll be at least 20 minutes discussion on a very important watershed moment for the Melbourne Football Club.
So two-hour show, folks.
You will not be shortchanged.
It's a two-hour show, folks. So Melbourne and the Western Bulldogs, how to rebuild from such low depths. Look at the Western Bulldogs. Captain leaves, Cooney leaves, Higgins leaves.
So what?
We will discuss that because we have discussed this on this show time and time again. They showed absolute faith in these blokes, and they're terrific blokes. June Syracuse kept going around and they kept playing. Higgins kept breaking down and Cooney kept playing and on one knee.
Griffin earned
his pay and is a loss.
He was a loss until he left. Right. And until he left, we learned something about Ryan Griffin, and the Bulldogs don't need a captain like that.
It's on record on our show how frustrating it was. And all of a sudden, Lin Jong gets a game. And Honeychurch plays. And Dalhouse gets the freedom to express his ability. Yes, they drafted well with Bontempelli. Wallace has come of age.
Just on Bontempelli, can I just say something about Bontempelli?
But has improved because he's now going inside as well as outside. So he's improved. And your favourite player up forward?
Oh, I love Stringer. But just something on Bontempelli. Yeah. I don't know how champion data points work. But last night he was the leading ranking player on 126.
Right.
If he got 126 last night, know this. Bontempelli was nowhere near as good as he can be and will be most weeks. He's going to get a 500. Like last night, Bontempelli started slowly.
And he's going to get that every week, Mark. So Selwood goes to him. Bang. New experience.
And he worked his way into the game and did that beautiful handball and turn in the last quarter. There's much more from Bontempelli. If that gets 126 points, oh boy, you better have him in your dream teams.
Whatever that means, Mark. Some of the tactical things, we mentioned that Selwood went to Bontempelli, which would be really, really good for him. What I like the way he worked through it. He's clean below his knees. He distributes the ball and he puts it to a dangerous spot with his kicking. I thought the Pick and Hearn matchup was very good. Although, you know, most clubs do it now. You've got to go to Hearn. But because they lost a Brown on top of Schofield and on top of McKenzie, Hearn had to go a little bit more central. So they had to drop that tag a little bit, but they kept a good eye on him. Very, very impressed with... hang on. We talk about building a team. Listen to these names, Mark. And this goes back to... You had an opportunity to play these blokes. Stringer, this is a forward line. Stringer.
Cracking, good game.
Cremery.
Works hard. He finds himself in some interesting spots.
7 foot tall.
Tom Boyd's encouraged. You know, I'd be buoyed by that performance.
Redpath.
Golden Duck? He made a Golden Duck last night.
He went into the midfield.
Yeah, but he really...
But someone has to play on him.
I'm saying, but he was up forward and he was up forward and they lost... They didn't have McKenzie. There's no Schofield.
Yeah.
They lose Brown. McGovern had other jobs.
I'll say he had other jobs.
I'd like to think when Redpath and Hearn's going for the ball, Redpath could outmark him.
Yeah.
But he didn't outmark him.
You had Dallas. You had Bontempelli going through there. You had Dixon, who was injured last year and got a chance. And then you had the effervescent Lin Jong and the crazy runner in Honeychurch. So now, there's a forward line with 4, 8, 10 blokes going through there. And at the other end of the ground...
Well, there's something very important at the other end of the ground. Now, Luke Beveridge is from a family of talent spotters. His dad, John,
Yeah.
Famously knew what to look for.
So you're saying to John, he rang up his son and said, son, you've got to put this bloke in. You've got to play him.
Why did they not play Michael Taylor last year?
I don't know.
Why did they, you know...
I don't know.
You really don't want to... I don't want to be unfair to Austin, but you don't really need guys that can't make Carlton's back line the cornerstone of your back line.
No, he's a good fella, Aussie, but you're right.
But I'm just saying, you had Michael Taylor at the club who looked very promising, and he's not his brother, but I tell you what, he's not bad, and he's what they needed another big body up there. Why, you've got to play the youngest and most.
Well, for years we were saying about the Bulldogs, no forwards and all that sort of thing, and small in the back line. I thought it was a beautifully balanced back line. You had the improved Roughhead.
And a good spot for Matthew Boyd.
Well, let's get to that in a moment. You had the three experienced blokes. Imagine Boyd, Murphy and Morris playing within a 30-metre arc of each other. Do you reckon there'd be organisation? Do you reckon there'd be talk?
Yeah, it was good.
Do you reckon there'd be experience?
Yeah. It allowed Johannesson to express himself. Last year,
he's scary because he goes.
And last year, Johannesson, I can break some confidences here because this is what was told to Johannesson last year. Whether it was directly by McCartney, I won't say. You can work it out yourselves. He was told that he needed to go to the next level. He needed to find something else in his football. I don't think he did. And he showed last night he didn't. But he was under the impression that he needed to add to his football armoury. His football armoury was already a run-and-gun player out of the back line, the replacement for Jared Harbrow. Now, when somebody can do that, why confuse them? Why fill their football brain with fog about the defensive, you know, all the other things that might not come naturally to them? Johannesson expressed himself last night the way he should be expressing himself, and that is by running and by being supported in the back line.
And at the same time
by experienced players.
Exactly. And so he's allowed to be scary, if that makes sense, Mark. That's what you're saying.
Well, he should be. That's...
If you've got Murph, Morris and Boyd...
Johannesson did nothing...
Just sweeping in behind you. Well, I reckon
he did
got,
nothing he... I haven't...
Do you want me he, to be nothing, unfairly we, critical?
Yeah.
I reckon he got too far forwarded at times.
Yeah, he does.
And because of the pace of the game, it didn't allow the Western Bulldogs... This is the only technical point. Mate, that game was scary. I turned off over from Sydney, and you can imagine watching that. Your eyes only had to look at the screen. This game, your eyes had to dart right of screen, left of screen.
It was great.
It was fantastic.
But sorry, you are right. You're 100%
right. It didn't allow
them
to set up their press, and they went through each other a fair bit.
You're quite correct. But that's what he does. That's him playing the... We saw last year when Johannesson was required to be more accountable and be more cognizant of the team structures, he ended up playing in the VFL. He is what he is. He takes the game on. It would be like telling Scotty Chisholm back in the day, look, don't play like that. We need you to be a lockdown forward or something. You get one... If you want Johannesson to play AFL football to the best of his ability, that's how he's going to play it. And the game, thank goodness... he's being allowed to express himself, because if we turn every footballer into robotic team plan followers, then we lose the very essence of what's good about our game, which is the brilliance and flair that makes us all gasp and stand up and, you know.
Exactly. I must admit off the SMS, look, folks, it wouldn't matter whether this is round one or round 22. Finally and I will analyse it. We don't pay any attention to that because it's inside the 120 minutes that we're looking at. So, but it is early days for Bevan. He's for Beveridge. He's getting some very good raps. And one very good point from Max made a good point that he only just came up, Mark, so you didn't read that. Beveridge looks at what you can do, not what you can't do. And from experience, that is a really strong thing to do, because you're looking to improve weaknesses. And maybe McCartney was looking at Johannesson and seeing a lot of weaknesses that he wanted to, you know, physicality, tackling, he contested ball, all those sort of things.
Which I guess is sort of understandable.
And Beveridge has come along and said, I'll cover you, I'll put Boyd back, I'll keep Murphy there, and I'll put Morris back. You have a bit of a crack at it. Yeah. You have a bit of a go at it, and if you make a blue...
I'm not saying what McCartney did out of hand is wrong, because under him, under McCartney, Johannesson became a footballer, and he was probably asking Jason to become a more complete footballer, but at least the new coach has come in and seen that didn't work, and it looks like we've got Johannesson Mark 1, which is great to watch and good for the Doggies. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, have a quick look at the West Coast Eagles, and I'll explain why the most talented footballer in the AFL remains at times disappointing.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football, full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555.
Finding the balance and when to not overhandball, and when we're under pressure, getting some metres, meterage, that's something we're working on. But yeah, there were some really good passages of play that we'll look at as a positive. So it's not all doom and gloom, but we're disappointed.
Well, that was Adam Simpson, and disappointed is, of course, what they would be in a game that was winnable. But given the early injury to Mitch Brown and the paucity of tall defenders, they battled on bravely. McGovern was fantastic. Put his body in harm's way constantly. Not only had to play as the only tall defender, but then had the courage to leave his man at times and just stand there in front of an oncoming pack of footballers. Off the SMS, from a Bulldog supporter, when we were speaking of Johannesson, boys, he played on Cripps all night, nearly cost us the game with lack of defence.
We got the game going behind us, and Cripps just kicked a goal on Johannesson. I think it's a reasonable observation. The fact is he didn't kick the five on him, and I tell you what, he could have got three, though. He did get three, but in today's rotations and swaps and people going up to stoppages and rotations, it's impossible now, Mark, to play the whole game on the same player. So Cripps, could have got lost in transition very, very easily, but I doubt very much where he got five. But, look, it's a reasonable point. But the thing Mark and I are making is we have to cop that. You're going to have to cop that. Could it have cost you the game, as our listener said? I don't know.
Luke Beveridge isn't silly. He knows when Johannesson goes on a run, there's going to be another player, and then it becomes the responsibility of those defenders that are playing behind the ball to man up and to assess exactly if the ball is turned over or on the rebound, exactly what it means.
Okay, then is Cripps, is he the right matchup for Johannesson?
Yeah, it's a good matchup because Cripps runs forward.
Isn't Cripps smart and clever and he'll get
him out forward.
He
runs forward of the ball or he drops out the back.
That's not a great matchup for Johannesson, is it? Well, who is ball watching and looking to go.
Well, they're both trying to play their attacking games. It's a good matchup because Cripps will take advantage of somebody that isn't a close checker.
Well, do you put Boyd across onto Cripps and say, yeah, check, mate?
But then you don't get the freedom that Johannesson got with Cripps.
Because Cripps is not a great chaser.
Correct.
There you go.
So somebody else has to take up the chase.
So there you go, folks. That is a legitimate Russian roulette game. And look, the listener's right. It could have worked the wrong way.
But it didn't.
It did kick five. It didn't this time.
That's right.
But if one's not a great chaser, you put the great runner on him.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's a very, very interesting coaching discussion, that one.
And it certainly shows Luke Beveridge's willingness to take the game on and take on the difficult task. Nick Natanui in the last quarter showed both sides of the Nick Natanui coin, and that is he kicked a goal, he picked a ball up with one hand that any midfielder would have been praised for as a champion. One hand, dodged an oncoming player, snap, goal, brilliant. But he's also the best tap ruckman in the comp, and the best. Not Aaron Sanderlands, who gets most taps. He is the best palmer and leaper. We're talking about a ruckman who picked it up like a ruck rover and kicked it like a forward pocket. The problem is, in that same quarter, he also had responsibilities deep in defence to hold his nerve, to fill a hole, to create a position. He was messy in a throw-in. There was a free kick to Stringer, but it could have been to Minson. It showed Nick Natanui's strength, which is natural ability, and his weakness, which is he doesn't have a fully developed football brain. You take as a fan, you take it because it's great to watch. As a West Coast supporter and as Adam Simpson, you certainly, I think you temper your the enthusiasm you'll get at press conferences and from fans with the knowledge that he's not the complete package by a long shot. So he's got a big responsibility. He looks like he wants to step up as number one ruckman, and we'll see how he does it. Just before we do go to the break, one more thing about the West Coast Eagles.
They're damn unlucky.
Oh, look, they are unlucky.
with Schofield, Brown, McKenzie. Take that out of your side, folks.
I'm going to say it. Everybody can think it. I'm going to say it. Last year's Brownlow medalist is not the greatest player to have ever won the highest honour in the game. And that was borne out in spades last night. The other curly blonde-haired bloke beat him comfortably. Welcome back to Full On Footy. Another hour to go. And, of course, a very big day on 11:16 SEN. We'll tell you what is to follow shortly. But every Sunday morning at this time, we go straight to the offices of the Herald Sun. John Ralph has, and unfortunately, from the get-go, been burning the midnight oil to keep up with a raft of injuries, some of them season-ending. And as we welcome John Ralph back to Inside Football's full-on look at football, John, unfortunately, you're a busy boy this morning.
Hello, Robert, and hello, Mark.
Yes,
yeah, you're
yes.
Right. I don't want to be obsolete, boys, because I love being on your program, but I'd like to be low profile. Instead, we've had a horror pre-season, a horror round one, and unfortunately I bring to you the news that Tom Rockliffe is out for nearly 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, with what we assume to be a busted couple of ribs, but unfortunately also is a punctured lung. So he will spend the night in hospital again tonight. As I say, for the best case scenario, but with punctured lungs and things like that, you can guard them up. But basically, worst case, out for 6 weeks from a horror round one for Brisbane and for Tom Rockliffe, the new captain.
Now, there's absolutely no question that Varko did anything wrong, but for disappointed Brisbane fans, they probably would have wished that he went for the mark two-handed and was actually going for the mark. But it was all legitimate. Gee, it was a big price to pay for courageously standing where footballers have to stand in this tough game of ours.
Yeah, it was. And look, I looked at that incident again and I thought to myself, at least Varko's going to get to this. But look, if he did touch the ball in going for that marking collision, it just flicked his fingers. It wasn't really a legitimate attempt. And yeah, that's exactly what you expect from your skipper. You stand under the contest where angels fear to tread. But unfortunately, sometimes bravery gets you into trouble.
Jagger O'Meara was playing in the kneeful, where famously good footballers get a lot of possessions. Unfortunately, he got something far worse.
He certainly did. His coach says he's out for the year. Now, officially, the ruling is that he will have long-term surgery on that ruptured patella. Now, we know he had surgery to shave the bone off both sides of the patella, or his left and his right knees. Now, you know, you and I probably aren't smart enough with the exact diagnosis to know how that might have affected the rupture that he did occur. You almost want your best players to be, if you're doing knees, you might as well be doing them in the ones rather than in the AFL. But he had been in blinding form. It's shown why he was ready to come back in the next week. He was only in a quarter and a half in and unfortunately crumpled. And as I say, Rodney Eade is saying, look, this is season over, as much as some of the official word might be that he might get back late in the year.
No. How are you, mate? Listen, I want to address your investigative skills, and you've certainly touched on it there from my point of view. I've seen two of these, Michael Long, ruptured patella, and Gary Bakanara. We remember that that incident very well. John, have you got the background on why he went to London for the two operations? You've sort of alluded to it. There wasn't a repair on the patellas, but and the next time he plays, he's out for the season. I'm not saying you have to investigate it more, but was he rushed back? Was the operation successful? Given our surgeons and the quality of our medical surgeons here, why was it a trip to London? So I guess I am raising questions on the urgency to go to London and the result of.
Well, he battled through patella tendonitis all of last year. And in fact, he played every game, but by all accounts was in intense pain. But I think we can only surmise that if you're off to London for Dr. Wolfgang Puck, who injects blood and platelets into people's knees, but it's obviously cutting-edge surgery. do we need to ask the question now whether the doctors had enough expertise to be able to manage it as he came back? Or was the surgery done by an international doctor and then the Gold Coast doctors picked up where they left off? Far better for us to make accusations of it. I think
No, it's not accusations.
Yeah, it's a take it as
a question.
To ask a few more questions of those doctors because, as you say, the last thing you want to do is to... Well, I'll tell you what, that surgery won't be too popular in the next year or two if that's the result. Your best player or your best emerging player out for the year.
Let's have a look at what happened at the MCG yesterday in terms of a possible match review panel on Matt Shaw.
Yeah, he was coming back with the flight and took out Dean Kent and of course, Drew Claret, which always used to be the worst-case scenario. But, look, I think this is one that will fall under that fine for players now. Now, he didn't turn his head with the flight. No, he took him out with, you could say an accidental or careless fist to the face. But, again, I think they were the kind of things that you might have been worried over the weekend as a player with last year with that system. You might have missed a week, 2-1. I think he'd be pretty confident of getting a fine, which basically is $1,000 and you play on.
If sadness can be portrayed in a single frame of the 2015 season, you'll go a long way to beat the sadness on the face of Mitch Brown, who knew instantly that his knee had gone from underneath him.
I certainly did. And look, those incidents where your knee crumples, I mean, it's always... almost always worst-case scenario. He was he was actually leading out to the ball with his defender and the left leg went. Of course, that is the knee which has been surgically reconstructed. And, you know, mostly clubs try and say, we're not quite sure and we'll tell you tomorrow. But Adam Simpson was pretty adamant in his post-match press conference. In fact, he said, we're 99% sure that his knee has gone under him and will need season-ending surgery. So, yeah, that's their best defender and probably the AFL's best defender, even though he didn't make the All-Australian team in McKenzie out. And we know that McGovern can perform some miracles, but they need about three McGoverns down there now. I just think the best sides are really going to get a hold of them, given their midfield is not that good. I think it's hard to see them playing finals anyway, but with those two out, it's probably a bridge too far.
Two games, 4 minutes, two shoulders. Not a happy start to the year for Dale Thomas or for David Myers.
No, you're right. Now, James Hurd is saying that he's hopeful that what happened to Daisy Thomas, only 4 to 6 weeks in terms of recovery rather than a season, might be a chance. Now, he'll have to have scans on that. He won't have had those now. He'll be having those as we speak, David Myers. But so, yes, the club will be hopeful 6 weeks rather than 6 months. And certainly Daisy Thomas got great news and said, yep, I've dodged the knife, as he said on Twitter. So that's only a six-weeker. He'll still have to play under duress. We saw Steve Morris last year. I'm not even sure how many weeks he missed the Richmond wrecking ball, but he did play out the entire season without shoulder surgery and had it in the postseason. And so Daisy Thomas will be hoping that he comes to heel quite quickly. Christian Jack's the other one that no one really on Thursday night, but had some rib soreness, and that has been shown to be broken ribs. So he will miss. They're saying two, but sometimes these things can take a little bit longer to recover. So 2 to 3 weeks for a player who had a fairly handy debut.
Well, he had a mixed game, and actually that rib injury might go some of a way to explain his lack of reach in some marking contests. So that's actually good news because he's better than that, and that could be an explanation.
Yeah, well, he did have Ben Griffiths, who at times the ball was delivered beautifully to him. Miles hit him out. You know, there's no way that Jacks is ever going to stop him at the top of his flight. But I think he showed enough that he is going to be a handy stopper. He only got a handful of possessions, didn't he?
So kicked a nice goal.
Yeah, that's the problem with Carlton at the moment. You know, they get players in, they've got to give up picks for them, and they need those players to be world beaters and rather than just the role players that Mick Malthouse loves.
At the end of the game last night, Collingwood supporters were enjoying the victory until they saw Steele Sidebottom incapable of shaking anybody's hand.
Yeah, it was a horror, wasn't it? Now, he has a broken thumb. Now, certainly Nathan Buckley said last night he'll miss a couple of weeks, but I think the tipping point will be whether he needs surgery to put a pin into that thumb. Now, they can be nasty with the scaphoids or whether it's just a clean break of the thumb, but they need players back rather than losing players. So he's out for potentially two, but if it is a plate, those can be a month or more. They can be nasty little injuries and can be hard to get your touch back very quickly.
Ralphie, it was a range of injuries, and for some players, sadly, season ending. But
can I say something funny?
Yes.
Ralphie's great, and we're no experts. I've had every one of those.
So I've had everyone. I didn't rupture my patella. I tore the patella in half.
So broken ribs you had?
Yeah. Dislocated my shoulder. I did my knee.
And a broken thumb.
And there's the scar on the thumb. Bit worried about Thomas. Subluxation is a loosening of the ligaments. And like you're right about Morris, you can settle it quickly. The pain goes away, but there will be a looseness that could affect him. Remember, Morris ran off. I reckon he's run off 6 times last year holding his shoulder. They tend to come out again, Mark, and go back in very quickly. And eventually, there's no doubt that if Daisy gets through, he will be operated on at the end of the year. So, yeah, he'll be able to play, but there'll be areas where he can't put his, he won't be able to put his arm wide or back further over his head because it'll just slip out. So they're going to have to strap it, they're going to have to rehab it, and watch the space with Daisy Thomas. Good luck to him, though.
And Ralphie, there's been some activity off the SMS this morning about a practice match injury to Ty Vickery.
Yeah, that's right. Now, he did come off clutching his knee. Yep. Now, I haven't got a return call from Richmond yet. But
you don't Tim have Clark, to, mate. I was there live.
Well, Tim Clark said that he hobbled off and he wasn't sure post-match what the damage was.
Yeah, I went and had a look at that game and just have a look at the Tigers and to have a look at Essendon. You know, the backup players are there. It's just up the road at Tullamarine. He just hobbled off. There was some suggestion on Twitter that he was stretchered off. No, he assisted himself off. Damien Hardwick, who I had a chat with, an old mate of mine, said, I can't speak to you. I've got to go and see Ty Vickery. So he was very concerned about it. So we're not too sure, and there was no way known he was going to come back onto the ground. So a bit of a concern, but...
Watch this space.
Well, yeah, we'll just see how that eventuates over the next couple of days.
John, thanks for that.
Thanks, John.
We'll speak to you in the week.
Cheers. Looking forward to that Melbourne call. What a heartwarming game. So I'm just going to sit back for you.
Yeah, just listen to this. You've got nearly half an hour on them.
So let's get to the break. And when we return, the Demons went in yesterday with plenty of doubting Thomases and continuing the religious theme that is the Easter weekend. A resurrection of sorts for the Melbourne Football Club might well truly be the second coming if they can stick to the game plan, play as tough as they did, and also finish off with the class that they did. We don't want to jump the gun early, but this might be a holy experience for Demons fans this year. Hell's bells, Demons win after the break.
Inside Football, Melbourne.
It's a grand old flag, it's a high-flying flag, it's the emblem for me and for you.
The Gold Coast Suns.
Mark has been taken by Tyson, able to step around the tackler, run to 48 metres, and that's a terrific finish. Dom Tyson, second goal. The Demons are flying.
Oh, I think probably been challenged 3 times. I mean, this footy club's been challenged a lot, and, you know, the results haven't been great when that's happened. So I think the fact that we obviously played some really good footy as we did last year, but getting challenged, you know, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, and then the guys just responding on the ground, I think that was probably the most pleasing.
Yesterday at the MCG, Melbourne 17-13, 115, which is it's an enormous score for them, given some of their performances last year. Defeated Gold Coast 13-11, 89, in front of 27,013, predominantly Melbourne fans. It was a game that Melbourne went into with a different mindset. It was not the Melbourne we saw last year. The addition of 2 experienced recruits up either end of the ground telegraphed and almost were key markers for a different Melbourne. Lumumba off the back line ran and ran and ran. He didn't get a million touches. He kicked a key goal in the last quarter. But in running, he made sure that the Melbourne mindset out of the back line was not slow, chip, careful play, but there was always the option of an explosion. And up the other end of the ground, a maligned little Carlton forward applied enormous pressure. He was buzzing around all day. He kicked a couple of goals. And whilst there have been small forwards tried at Melbourne, a number of them over recent times, and we know that Garlett can have his ups and downs, he's absolute appetite for the non-glamorous meant that Paul Roos had got in between these boys' ears in the right way. Because I reckon when Garlett's on, you know that the coach's message has been heard by everybody, Shorey.
It's a very good point, Mark. But when you say got to him, he's only been not got at for 1 year. Had a bad year last year, had a an unsavoury incident off the footy field, and also didn't come forward with the driving thing. So that upset him a little bit. In the three prior years to that, he kicked 120 goals.
Oh, can play footy. Roos will be challenged by the fact that one great game does not mean that the season will be locked and loaded, because he needs to be at Garlett. I'm not talking about the goals. I'm talking about the harassing, the forward line pressure that really caused a lot of the Gold Coast jitteriness. There was a great moment, by the way. Gary Ablett was very unfairly pinged for holding the ball when Garlett chased him down. Ablett turned one way then the other, but being Ablett, he was able to ultimately get the handball away. It shouldn't have been a free kick for holding the ball, but under the new stricter laws, maybe the umpire went a little early. Thought the umpiring, by the way, this weekend has been outstanding. Have you liked it?
I have.
I've really liked it. Consistent.
You haven't got a lot of time, and I think the consistency of, if you try to beat someone, or if you have a second thought.
Yeah, that's right.
If you have your first thought and you're caught, well, I'll ball the ball up. But if you've had two thoughts go through your head, will I kick it, will I handball, or will I dodge, and you get caught, remarkably consistent.
Yeah, and prior opportunity is being taken on its word. If there is a prior opportunity don't use it, see you later, brother. Now, the thing with Ablett was he didn't use it, but he never was brought to ground because of his ability to remain difficult to tackle, even with that shoulder of his. They showed afterwards, Ablett sort of turned around to him and smiled, and Garlett went and gave him a little high five as though to say, yeah, no, that wasn't a free kick. And it was just a nice piece of interplay between two opponents. I think that there was a play. There's no way he's going to be in anybody's best, and he probably, if you look at the numbers, he won't be, who in the first half set the game up. He set the game up for a particular reason, and that is that he made his opponent look apprehensive. And when your key ruckman is unsure about where to go, how to attack the ball,
how to protect yourself,
then others like Bunnell, Jack Martin, and a few with question marks in that department are unlikely to be fortified for the contest ahead. So I think Mark Jamar actually set a tone, quickly followed by these scruffy, unfashionable, but very effective types like Vandenberg and Kent. Newton, who kicked a couple of smart goals later, was doing tough stuff early on. Nathan Jones, we know, he looks ferocious, but he plays ferocious.
Just stop there a moment. I'm sorry to interrupt. Did you just call Melbourne scruffy and unfashionable?
And tough.
Melbourne supporters right now, and tough, will be running laps of their lounge room.
I'll stop their laps. If the club had not stupidly bypassed...
Don't.
No, I'm going to say it. Because Viney is... He's ferocious. He's little, but he's ferocious. If for some unknown reason, because you didn't want two Vineys at the club,
there we go.
Had the club not bypassed Ollie Wines, you would be building up one of the most ferocious physical mid. Imagine, because Jones is so physical. Viney's physical.
Now they've stopped running laps in their lounge room and they've got their hands in their head.
Did they not take Ollie Wines? It would have been a fearsome build of a midfield. Angus Brayshaw. Look, I know the Sandringham Dragons.
I know the Hullabury football team. I watched this kid play since year nine.
Well, last year at the BNF, to watch the highlights of Brayshaw, the thing that stood out, and I'd said this pre-season, he's tackling. He is a ferocious hombre. Now, that is a great debut. I'm not scared about putting the curse of expectation on Brayshaw, because even if he's not getting ball or kicking goals, if things aren't running for him, don't worry. He will still imprint on a game of football. It's his DNA.
And well summed up, and that gives us a great lead into the Gold Coast. If things aren't going his way, and this is a number 10, 18-year-old playing his first game, if things aren't going his way, Well, I tell you what, a lot didn't go the Gold Coast way on the weekend, and they were very disappointed. When you read out the team, you said Melbourne, 17-13, defeated. You should have said defeated a selective Gold Coast. They were intimidated by physicality. We are saying things about Melbourne we have not said for decades. They were intimidated. They did not want to contest. And I tell you what, Rodney Eade might want to come out and say there is nothing wrong with Gary Ablett's shoulder. Well, I tell you what, Jay Viney spent 120 minutes putting that theory to the test, I tell you, because he was fantastic. Fair, hard, opportunistic tackle, into the ground, bump, hit, all fair. Nothing off the ball, nothing off the line. I saw Heretia Lumumba test it there at one stage. But that was just fantastic. And you're right, the unfashionables, Vandenberg. I tell you who was very good, because he has a crack and he's lively. He may lose his spot to Dawes, but Sam Frost puts his body...
Oh, Sam Frost went Sam back with the ball. He did
Sam
something.
Frost doesn't muck around either.
He did a non-stat piece of work at the city end of the ground. He went back with the flight of the ball. He was never going to mark it, but it was as... same sort of courage as Riewoldt's mark at the SCG. He just kept running back with the flight of the ball and got a hand on it and created a point instead of a potential mark. There was a player to me that summed up the Gold Coast. He summed up the Gold Coast because in the way he played, there was a level of disrespect for the opposition to the point of carelessness. Now, we know you can kick the ball, Trent McKenzie, but that doesn't mean every time you get the ball that you can across your body or you can just pick somebody out 55 metres away, not worry about the fact that somebody might run you down, but basically try and play super boot every time you get the ball. And he did it two or three times yesterday in a manner that made one feel as though it was either still, hey, mate, NAB challenge is over, or wake up and smell the MCG grass. Melbourne are having a red-hot crack here. You cannot waltz around that back line as though this is the Melbourne of 2012. You're going to get pinged, baby. And he turned it over and he got exposed. And in a red-hot Melbourne forward line, his defence at times looked, I'll say it, weak. He looked weakish.
Off the SMS, Mark, Kent, they've spoken about Kent. Well, he's another unfashionable. Yeah. We've seen him bits and pieces, and he can kick a goal, but yesterday he was deployed as a defensive forward. No one would know Nick Malcheski more than Paul Roos. So that'll be, with his recruiting to the Gold Coast, the attention will now certainly turn to Malcheski every week, and he's going to cop someone. I thought Kent did a fantastic job on limiting him. It was a really good balance, Melbourne. You had the creativity of Lumumba and Salem off half-back, who provided, you know, Lumumba provided dashing run.
And don't worry.
Salem doesn't run as much, but he's...
Nice kick.
He's decisive. He's decisive. He's not scared to hold his ground, so he gets a kick away. And Newton is clever and smart and gives him a different dimension. And him going up forward, although he's not a bigger mark as Howe, just allowed Howe to play the... what would I call him? The sixth defender floated across. How many intercept marks did he do? He pushed across there.
Very smart.
Remember,
isn't
they've lost. They've lost Frawley, so their key defenders now are Garland, who was outstanding. He picked up a tall, and the next minute he would pick up Ablett, McDonald, and Dunn. So it is a. It's not. It's not gold class at the pictures.
No, they'll be
but
tested.
It doesn't
they'll,
have to be.
They'll be tested. McDonald's got
they'll
a
They'll be tested. That's a very good way of putting it.
He's got a big tank, McDonald. So he'll keep running, and in the end, he's run because of... And we know that there was no Dixon and Lynch, and Tom Lynch is going to be a very good key forward.
Well, they're both very good players.
He kicked over 40 goals last year, Lynch. He's going to be a beauty. So McDonald had the freedom of knowing that if the ball was turned over, there wasn't going to be necessarily the person to make him pay. He didn't have to stay tight to his opponent all day, but he played a very good game of football.
And Rodney Eade basically acknowledged this because when they look really dangerous, they set up in the inside forward line Ablett, who I don't care what my old mate says, he's not right, and he's going to take some time. But they had your man, number four, Martin?
Yeah.
Bernal?
Martin was bandaged. He must have got bandaged
and
on the way
Ablett,
out.
Did
Martin get bandaged down the race?
It's a dynamic small forward line that paid dividends there for a while till Melbourne adjusted. A show wouldn't be a show without Jack Watts.
Of course.
And I'm not being biased. I just think he played in the right position. He showed his work rate. He kicked three goals.
He also didn't look like somebody who'd put lemon rinse in his hair. He looked like a more...
He
more
had a
like,
shave.
He looked more like a footballer too.
Yeah, he combed his hair. I know.
That's being silly. But
we are being silly, but we're not really. He got rid of the silly beard. He's got a nice haircut. He looked like a footballer. He moved
But
like
he just looked like one of the team. And
just looked like one of the team.
And played a smart game of football.
And that's what he is.
He actually dropped back. He actually dropped off his opponent a couple of times back towards the goals that had the kicks been better into him. There are a couple of occasions when Kennedy Harris is a good kid, but Kennedy Harris and Garlick got a bit of steam up. Had they just had a tad more composure, they would have had in Watts a really good outlet out the back. Hogan didn't do a heap yesterday. He's a hard-working footballer, though. I reckon people at the MCG, I wasn't there, I reckon at the MCG you would have got a better understanding of how gutsy this kid is in terms of the hard running that's required in footy. A lot of guys over 6'3" feel that they're excused from the hardest of hard running, but the champions don't. Nick Riewoldt doesn't. And I think Hogan's got that quality. He works very hard.
It was a great highlight, and it was probably the loudest cheer for the day. I think the game was over. If it was, three goals, the icing on the cake right at the end of the game was that big mark in the left forward pocket. A big mark from a big forward, and didn't they just enjoy it? Now, this is a team that can also be quite ruthless with selection, if they want to be. Because Chris Dawes, Bernie Vince, Jack Grimes, they may choose to make a statement and say, look, have a run with Casey. It may be a little bit flippant on part of their selection. They play, they're away next week to GWS. But there's a great opportunity. I wouldn't like to see Sam Fosh dropped. I wouldn't like to see Vandenberg dropped, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess summing it all up, Mark, you said it in your opening statement. Mark Jamar, you didn't get a mention anywhere. Your stats were ordinary, and yet the value of your physicality to your opponent in sending a message to your teammates, this is how we're going to play today, probably made you the most valuable player on the ground. So well done to the big Russian.
Like a quick chat about the Gold Coast. Off the SMS it says here, I'm confused. Were you not the same experts that predicted Gold Coast to win a premiership and be a super club in 5 years? No.
Oh, no, we weren't. There were other people that did that from their own club.
I'm on public record as picking my eight for the season, and they are not in my eight in 2015. And I'm on public record. You can go and listen to the audio. That I said, I believe GWS are already a better team than Gold Coast and would finish above them this year.
I have picked them in eighth spot in inside football because of one reason. They sacked a coach who had them at third position at round nine and in the finals for nearly 80% of the season till Ablett dropped off and they dropped off. So the decision to appoint Rodney Ead was based purely and simply on making the finals. I had them in eighth spot just.
I'm surprised that in their fifth year, you see, I have a look at the GWS list, and that to me, especially by next year, is a star-studded list. And I'm surprised, with limited due respect, that these players are still playing for the Gold Coast. This is not the players, and I know that they've got guys out, but I did not expect players like Gorringe, Sexton, Broughton to still be playing. They're regular players. Gorringe Tape, is it? Is he still?
No, I'm not sure about that.
I'm not sure. Shaw? Well, what's Matt Shaw? What's Gorringe?
What's your mate McKenzie? We know he's probably the best left foot kick in the competition.
He has some tricks. I can understand. I think McKenzie yesterday was disrespectful, but I understand why you have the longest kick in the comp playing in the team. But there are other guys there that are just workmanlike footballers that don't, to me, reflect the enormous amount of first round draft picks and concessionary opportunities that were gifted the club. And we know that they've missed some opportunities. Don't tell me, they had a look at Dane Zorko and said he wasn't up to AFL football. You know, he was around the corner from them. He wasn't good enough. There are players that they don't have. I'm not besotted by their raft of players under some clear, you know, obviously Ablett stands out for them, and they've got some outstanding young talent. But who are their, who's their midfield? Who are the stars of their midfield? Dion Presti is a very good footballer. We
David
know that.
David Swallow's in there. Michael Riccitelli is the tagger.
All right, so Riccitelli came from Brisbane. He's coming towards the end of a good career. Swallow has been up and down for them. But that's okay. He's still a good footballer. He had his best year last year. Who else? O'Meara got injured, which is very unfortunate. Because have a look at that GWS midfield. There's like seven or eight names there of future stars. Whitfield doesn't even play in the midfield. Cornelio's a helper. There's Shiel, there's Smith, there's Hoskin Elliott, there's Treloar. Not to mention they've got Ward and Griffin. But I don't see that at the Gold Coast. And they never had the big key forwards. Now, we know that obviously Patton's injured this year, but he's a big kicking, marking forward. Boyd, they traded Boyd and they've got Cameron. Whereas these guys, yeah, Lynch is good, very good, and he's the one. But Dixon, May, Day, not sure. Not certain. Their backline, again, it doesn't, 5 years in, this is not the glorious, that's why I had them at 12th this year. I just don't think it's the glorious list that it should be at this point in time. I don't think Danny Stanley should still be there if they'd got things right. And he's been great for them, but I just don't quite see. I'm surprised at how they, you know, Hallahan from Hawthorn, handful of games only.
I didn't mind him.
No, he's a good. He's an honest player. Saad from Coburg. They're the sort of players teams not with the sort of list opportunities that Gold Coast had should be picking up, really. I don't know. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. But
well, they've got got your mob next week up there at Metricon, Gold Coast versus St Kilda. So let's wait and see, mate. Watch the space. But we're obviously far more optimistic at this stage in the season, 1 week in.
Off the SMS, Gold Coast have got a much better list than the Saints. Do you have any idea whoever sent that in? How many top three, top five, first round draft picks?
What's the relevance of that comment anyway?
Well, it's aimed at me, but I'm just saying they've got a better list than the Saints. The fact that you've even brought it up as a discussion point means that you must have concerns with their list. So they've, you know,
if they got a list, a better list, what Mark was saying, they got a better list than GWS. And yeah, that will evolve as the season goes on.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not besotted by the look of that list. I am by GWS's. These teams were created to succeed. By this year, Gold Coast was supposed to be in the finals for sure. By next year, top four, within 7 or 8 seasons to win a flag. They've got to get on their bloody bike if they're going to do that. Not because of this game, because of how they finished last season, because of how they've chewed up and spat out a coach, and because of their list. That's how I read it. As for the Demons, well, they came in to yesterday's game a possible wooden spooner. They ain't winning no wooden spoon this year. And yes, off the SMS, I think Daniel Cross was outstanding yesterday. He was outstanding. Forget hot cross buns. Hot cross does suns. That's
right.
That should be your morning feed.
Go to a break.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside football. Full on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. Inside football, the Brisbane Lions.
We are the pride of Brisbane town, we're gold, gold.
Collingwood.
We
basically dominated the game for the best part of three quarters and gave the opposition a sniff because we didn't finish a couple of chances there at the end of the third quarter and gave ourselves a bit of a scare, but I thought the leadership and the pluck in that last 8 minutes just to hold the game and do what we needed to do was pretty good.
It's extremely frustrating, no doubt, to start like that. Three quarters of watching us get completely obliterated in contested possession and this effort and tackling and all those key indicators to somehow turn it around, plus 14 in the last quarter, contested possession.
They were the two coaches last night at the Gabba. It was Collingwood 12-14-86, Brisbane 11-8-74. At one stage, the scoreboard read 83-30, and then Brisbane started the long run back. The crowd last night, the biggest of the four games played since the blockbuster start to the year with Richmond and Carlton, 31,240. Blair, White, side bottom and cloak all got a brace, as they say in soccer, two goals. Christensen, Rich, Green, a brace for the other mob, Brisbane. This was a game, Shorey, that Collingwood had by the short and curlies because of what everybody said wasn't going to happen, and that was a midfield that could dominate the star-studded and bulging, and we don't even know where to put guys anymore, midfield of Brisbane. They've got midfielders all over the place, and it is a good midfield, Brisbane's. Let's not get it wrong, and Rockcliffe was a big loss. But Dane Swan, those chunky legs and big core of his just kept churning through the Gabba, and as it got wet, he didn't lose any of his strength or effectiveness. Adams, maybe the best thing that happened to Taylor Adams was, for many Collingwood supporters, the worst thing of 2014, the announcement that they'd lost Dane Beams, because he stood up as inside and he stood up in a big way. Taylor Adams, another recruit from GWS. They got some players, didn't they? Was fantastic last night. But I want to talk about that last 8 minutes, because in the last 8 minutes, the game could have been lost. We know that generally teams that have to come a long way back in football, not only do they spend a lot of energy doing it, but because the opposition are defending the game, if they ever hit the front or draw level, then when the other team has to attack, there's not a lot left in the tank. But early on in the season, round one, not just the Essendon situation, Shorey, you can have fluctuations in team fitness. And if Collingwood were gone, then Brisbane would have won that game. But they were not gone, Collingwood. In the last 8 minutes, I want to name some players that need to be recognised for their performances. And those players are Tommy Langdon.
He's fantastic.
A kid by the name of Ramsey.
Well, I was going to talk about them. Oxley. He was off the ground, but...
A boy by the name of Jared Blair, who is thrust into a more prominent role in the midfield because of Dane Beams' departure.
I would put Tuvey in that group. I thought he was sensational.
And then somebody else who I think doesn't necessarily have a great reputation for ferocity, but Varko did a couple of things in that last quarter that were also
very
desperate. Important. So,
well, so he should. He comes from a great culture, so he
and
should.
He's playing his first game, offer, and he's playing his first game in a mighty club.
He should offer leadership and examples.
But had they not stood up in those last 8 minutes, there was enough ball for Brisbane. Don't worry about that. You saw guys like Adcock closing in on goal, but just being, you know, he had the
he
ball.
Tried to will his side over the
ground.
Yeah,
they're pushing forward. Lewis Taylor got into the game. He's a beaut. Last year's NAB Rising Star winner. And he worked his way into the game, and by the end, he was a real threat. Zorko made a decision late in the game that may have been correct, but he didn't get it right. He took a mark, and this was really their last roll of the dice. 3 minutes to go, 12 points down, and he's taken a mark on the defensive side of the centre square. So he's on the centre square line, and he seizes upon an opportunity to sneak away. And he went to sneak off. Now, who was on the mark? Was it Pendlebury?
He got caught from behind.
He might have been caught at Tapes High. I'm not 100% sure. But he got caught.
He had to do it, Mark.
No, it was great play by the Collingwood. The Collingwood, you know, this is late in the game. Minds and bodies tire. But he got nabbed, and that was the end of the chance. Brisbane had some real tries. Look, the question is how their forward line functions in the absence of forwards. McStay was good in the first half.
The absence of forwards.
Well, they don't have forwards, really.
You know,
McStay worked hard.
They're going to have an issue. They threw Leuenberger down there with Martin. Martin didn't play as well as he had last year.
Of course not, because he wasn't first ruck.
And I think that Brody Grundy was fantastic for them.
Now, I'm being told it was Tom Langdon who caught him. So yeah, it was Tom great Langdon. Play by Tommy Langdon called Zorko. But they don't have forwards. They just put people up there. And maybe McStay will be a forward.
All right.
But good, you know, it was a very interesting end to a game that Collingwood had rightfully won through the midfield.
Anyway, I'll tell you my little story, Mark, and I'm watching the Bulldogs game and I'm thinking, and I'm looking down in the right hand of the screen, and it was fantastic, the Bulldogs game, and I'm thinking, I'm going to have to go across the other game for the second half to at least...
So the people know that
I watched at least half the game. But that
it's 83-30.
So
it could have been 218 or 124. Who knows what the score was.
Reluctantly, I went over there. Now, there's a piece of play in the first 30 seconds of first minute. The ball went in the Collingwood forward pocket in the left corner of the screen, Mark. And it was a line ball, literally a line ball. The ball was on the line. And number 35, Ryan Lester, looked at the ball, looked around him, and thought, oh, that'll go out without being decided. Dane Swan, as smart and as crafty as he is, stole it off him, got it to Sidebottom, who ran in and kicked a reasonably difficult goal, but not for Ryan Sidebottom's the Carlton Open bowler, his brother. And I thought, mate, you haven't come out after half-time switched on. And I think it was 4-1, they just put the game on ice then. And from then on, they kicked the 7 goals. But if that was indicative of what I missed in the first half, then that was very, very Gold Coast-like, wasn't it? It was like miles ahead of themselves. Full credit to Collingwood and Buckley. He may have had names that were looking up the football record at the moment. But Ramsey did well. Oxley, De Goey played his first game.
Yeah.
So he sent out a lot of inexperience in that side, but it was the way the team played. Their physical pressure and their forward press was absolutely fantastic. So Buckley, a big tick for not so much preparing the individuals, but he prepared the team really well to play a particular style to beat the Brisbane Lions. And once again, until they got it on their terms, they were very, very selective in the contest. Very selective.
Sorry, who were the best... At the end of last year, who were the best two midfielders in the AFL?
Well, Scott Benderbury's one, I would have thought.
It's an open-ended question. If I said Gary Ablett and Dane Beams, would I be far off the money?
Oh, no, you're as they say, Mark, you're in the ballpark.
Both of them handballed backwards yesterday to opponents who kicked goals. Beams just handballed into the goal square for a disaster.
And Gary Ablett... Colin Garland on the chest. Yeah.
And he just handballed backwards. These are two star players who, had this been done by lesser lights, fans would have been calling for their heads. But they are two of the very best in the business. It shows that even champs under pressure in our great game can make a blue. A break, and when we come back, we'll tell you what's up for the rest of the day on 11:16 SEN, Melbourne's home of the greatest game on earth, Australian rules football.